Hello, everybody. Welcome to Masterclass. On this day, what's the date? February 2nd. Is today Groundhog Day? Are there any new developments?
My grandmother's birthday.
Oh.
Happy birthday, Grandma. Saw its shadow and went back in.
Oh. All right, fine. So
that means 6 more weeks of winter.
Yes, Burr. It does.
I am freezing here.
I'm not, and wish I was here in Florida. I want to get winter as long as I can here because it's going to start to get really hot. It was hot yesterday. All right, so we have a really great masterclass going on this evening. And I don't have my notes with me, but let me check really quick what I've written in the Teams. And our agenda this evening, is it listed here? Oh, I love all the little faces somebody put in there. It's an old one. Almost there. Hold on. So this evening we have Casey Watson presenting Figma with Model Created, and Derek Lewis going over his project Breaker Animations. And Derek Agui Zinsu with his Sift workstation. So this should be really exciting this evening. So we will start with Casey, then Derek, and then Derek. Derek, and then Derek. I have to say it French-like. That way you know the difference. All right, Casey.
Okay.
It's all yours.
Share my screen.
All right.
Okay, can you guys see it? I'm about to start the presentation.
I love the colors. Yes.
Yeah, nice colors, definitely.
Thank you. Okay. And then I'm going to play it and let me know if you guys can hear it.
Figma Design by Casey Watson. So what is Figma? Figma is a design tool for user interface and...
Oops, sorry.
And experience. It allows for collaboration in the cloud and has a large community for people to share their designs with others. In this presentation, I will be going over some background information about Figma that someone should know before they get started designing, including how to design for the client and not for yourself, and efficient ways of practicing how to do that, as well as how to actually use Figma, including frames, text, colors, shapes, default properties, and groups. Section 1, background and planning. User interface is how the product looks and feels, and user experience is the functionality and how the user will interact with it. A lot of times there will be set designers for each type, but knowing how to do user interface and user experience can help boost your portfolio in the job market. And then there's project brief, which is a short summary of project requirements that should be short and easy to understand. I am a cake decorator, and one of the rules at work is to make the order how the customer wants it and not how we think would look better. And that same concept applies to design. making your designs how the client would like it or how their target audience would like it, rather than designing for what you think looks nice in comparison to what the client actually needs. And a great way of practicing this is a random project generator, as it is something that you haven't already thought of in your mind and had an idea for. So that's what I used for this tutorial. This is an example of what a project brief looks like. So it has the name, the location, and the target audience. When I started with Figma, my brain went straight to high fidelity designs, getting it picture perfect. But all designers should start with low fidelity designs, no matter what their experience level is. The great thing about using low fidelity designs is that it's easier to edit and promotes brainstorming, as well as it can be done basically anywhere, even on paper or marker board. And then the high fidelity is more of your picture perfect finish. It's when you can actually test your designs, but it is harder to edit. Section 2, frames. I'm going to import my project brief for reference. Now, what my project brief tells me is that this ideal clientele would have a busy lifestyle and a respected field, which tells me an app. So on my frames, there is different selections. So I'm going to go with phone to start off, and I'm going to go with the 14 Pro Max. Now I'm going to copy this. Now, if I wanted to copy more than one at once, I'm going to hold the shift key and copy again. Drag that over. Now I'm just going to rename my frames. So some more about frames. In the previous tutorial, we had used this 14 Pro Max, which I'm going to click on this again, except this time I'm also going to click on a landscape one. Something that I noticed just through user experience is that a lot of phone apps won't typically have a landscape option unless it's a game. However, I have noticed that a majority of websites have this, so it is important that, especially if you are going into website design, that you also create designs in landscape. Another thing is custom frames. So you can make your custom frame by dragging it out, but you can also edit the sizes here. So for this, I'm going to do a 5x7 card frame. And every inch in pixels is 72 pixels for every inch. So for the width, for since it's 5, I'm going to put 360. For the height, I'm going to put 5, since it is 7 inches. So that is a little bit how you can do a custom frame. Section 3, text, color, and shapes. Okay, so next we're going to be focusing on text. So there is fixed size, and then there's auto width, and each one has a purpose. So if I automatically click, then I am going to get the auto width. So I'm just going to put some coffee beans. Drag that to the center. And then next, I'm going to do the fixed size by clicking and dragging, which this also has its place. So for this, I'm going to put best beans. And then a great way for the fix to optimize the fix size is like this. So I like to use numbers that are easy to remember versus like if I were to drag this and just get like a random number like this, like a decimal. I don't like that. And then I center it. And so say, like, you know, I wanted a lot of spacing, but I didn't want to have to create a bunch of different text sizes. And so if I were to change this to the auto width, it would mess up. So I just control Z. So that's why the fixed size also has this purpose. So the next thing we're going to be going over on is shapes and layering. So now that I have placed my rectangle here, my product shot has disappeared. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to drag that product shot above the rectangle. And then next, we're going to do the same thing, but with the buy now and more infos. So it disappeared again, but something else we can do is on a rectangle, we can hit send back. Next, I'm going to be showing you color. This typically isn't part of our low fidelity design. However, it's something you need to know. So something you can do is you can drag this bar and then you can select what shade you want throughout here. And if you notice, I only select two of them. That's so I can show you the dropper tool. So going back to the fill on this last one, and I'm going to hit the dropper tool and I'm just going to click here. And then now all three of them are the same color. Now, granted, I could always hit shift and click all of them, but I wanted to show you that dropper tool. Section 4, default properties, scaling, and grouping. Okay, so for default properties, something I can do is now I'm on my rectangle, I'm going to add some properties to it. So I'm going to add a stroke, make it a 2, make it a little bit easier to see, and add a little shadow. And then next, we're going to go to edit, set default properties. So now every time I drag a rectangle out, it's going to have those properties. Next, say I want rectangles that have already been created to have these properties. What I'm going to do is I'm going to copy properties. Then I'm going to hold shift key to select both of these. And then I'm just going to paste properties. In this next tutorial, I'm going to be going over grouping and scaling. So I already have my buy now more info button grouped. So we're going to be grouping this product shot. So I'm going to hold the shift key and click on both of them, the rectangle and the product shot text. And then I'm going to hit group selection and then I'm going to name it product shot or product display. Sounds good. Give it a little bit different name. And then, so next is going to be going over scaling. So typically, Figma is always at this automatic move. I just happen to already have it clicked on scale. So what this does is when I have a group, it actually makes everything bigger when or smaller, whether it's your text or your shape or even the stroke, it makes everything bigger. If you were to try to do this with just the move tool, this is what would happen. See how the product shots not really moving correctly. It's like going in different lines and stuff versus when I have the scale, product shot is staying in one line. Here are my references. Thanks for watching my presentation. Just want to give a shout out to SlidesGo for the presentation template. Thanks, guys.
That was awesome. That was really cool.
Thank you.
I know Angela liked it.
Yes, I did. Did you ever use Figma before I introduced it to you, Casey?
No, I did not. That it was my first time with you.
Yeah, nice. You've learned a lot.
Yeah, the scaling thing was super helpful. I didn't realize that previously until I started watching some more tutorials. And then when I found that, I was like, that answers so many questions.
Yeah, it looks like it's a lot of fun to work to use. I haven't used it much yet, but I see what's coming out of it, which is really nice. All right, Derek, Lewis, are you ready?
I am ready. Good evening, everybody.
Take it away.
All right, let me share here. All right. I also have some computer audio playing here, so if there's no audio coming through, just let me know. I'm Derek Lewis. I'm a software development team member here, and I am doing my presentation on custom sprites in Unity. So let's start this.
So I've been working on Project Breaker, and one of the more interesting aspects has been attempting to animate some of the assets. My daughter loves games and loves drawing, so she decided to create some concept art for me. She's far more talented than I, so I've accepted her input. We'll be focusing on her robot paddle character and the lanternfish. I'll start off by saying that this is a fairly approachable project for anyone who is interested. Unity can be a bit quirky, but there is a large community supporting it. Furthermore, I have a bit of experience with the drawing hobby, though it's been a few years since I've drawn anything. I have even less experience with animation, and this is my first time using Unity. I'm definitely not a pro, so anyone could find success with a little patience. And if the drawing part is too intimidating, there are plenty of assets that are available to purchase or even for free. I'll do a quick rundown on the tools I'm using, but there's no hard set rules for much of this. It depends on your preferred environment, art style, and applications. I'm using the Procreate drawing application, which is exclusive to the iPad. My iPad screen has been cracked by my toddler, so it has a nice vintage feeling, but you can feel free to customize your device however you want. Tablets with some sort of pen support help, but that's not required. You might choose the Samsung Galaxy Tab S8 or Microsoft Surface Pro. Alternatives to Procreate for other platforms include Photoshop Sketch, Autodesk Sketchbook, ArtRage, Krita. Here's a link to find assets if you don't want to draw anything on your own. I'm also using Adobe Photoshop, but you could use GIMP, Krita, or Photopea, and I'm using VS Code and, of course, Unity. Okay, let's get started. Here we have a basic functional version of the Brick Breaker game. For anyone who isn't familiar, it's a pretty simple classic game where you move the paddle left and right to deflect the ball into the bricks to clear the screen. There's currently a very simple score system that awards points whenever a brick is hit, and you can see that over here. And there's a life system here, where each time the paddle misses the ball, the life counter decreases. The problem is that everything is very generic right now. There's a lot that can be done to improve the game. For example, we could change several of the game mechanics. We could add music and sound effects, backgrounds, and other elements and assets. But today we are going to focus on the sprites. We're going to swap out the paddle sprite and introduce a sort of enemy sprite. And I'll show you a couple of ways to animate sprites within Unity. Now, we will still use the current paddle code we've written to maintain the same behaviors, such as user, movement, input, speed, and such. I'll go over these quickly. We can see all the project sprites down here. There's a sprite for the ball, for the bricks, and for the paddle. To the right, there are components which are added to each sprite. Two important components are Rigid Body 2D and Box Collider 2D. The Rigid Body component allows an object to react to game physics such as gravity and drag. The Box Collider component defines a rectangle-shaped area of collision properties. Together, these components define how an object physically interacts with other objects in the game space, and these properties can be referenced within the code by creating a script for the paddle. This brings us into VS Code, where we can edit the script in C#. Here at the top, I have properties for a rigid body and direction, which takes the form of a Vector2 object type. Vector2 describes X and Y positioning. I also have variables for speed and max bounce angle. And I'll just quickly go over some of this code. This part of the code constantly checks for input from the A key or left arrow and the D key or right arrow, and this sets the movement direction to left or right. When no key press is detected, there is no movement. To increase the speed of the paddle movement, the direction is multiplied by the speed variable, which was set previously. This bottom section uses the collision 2D properties from the box collider component to detect when the game ball collides with the paddle. Basically, all of this code bisects the paddle into two equal lengths to calculate the contact points in a range of -100 to 100%. The max bounce angle variable is included to limit the deflection angle of the ball. In this way, the ball will bounce from the paddle at a different angle depending on where it hits, offering more variance and control. If you're curious, a quaternion is a complex number of the form W plus XI plus YI plus ZK, where W, X, Y, and Z are real numbers and I, J, and K are imaginary units that satisfy certain conditions. I was able to use this concept and my advanced mathematical knowledge to calculate the resulting ball movement. Just kidding, I borrowed it from this guy. Here's the quick time lapse of the new paddle robot design that I drew in Procreate. It's nothing too fancy, but it should help show the concepts. If you remember, this was designed by my daughter's concept art. It's important to plan ahead when creating your sprites. You'll have to have an idea of sprite size, art style, line width, and layer so that you can animate the different parts of the object and so the design is cohesive with the rest of your assets. Once this is done, I exported a layered PDF file and opened it in Photoshop. The goal here is just to separate the components of each layer, which will be necessary for bringing it into Unity as a PNG file. Now we're back in Unity, ready to add the new sprite we exported. I'm going to head into the sprites folder and import our robot paddle friend. And just to keep in mind, this is one way to handle this, and we are working with PNG file. There are other methods to go about this depending on the desired outcome and the sprite file type. Now I'll select our current paddle sprite and the one we're going to replace. And over here in the sprite renderer, I can actually just select the new sprite and it replaces the old sprite while retaining all the other component properties that have been set. I'll just move the sprite up a bit here, and you'll probably notice that the box collider is no longer aligned with the paddle, but we'll fix that a bit later. For now, we need to set up the sprite. This guy needs to be reassembled, and we'll give him some bones. I'll select our robot sprite in the assets window. I want to make sure sprite mode is single, which is what we need for PNG image. Now we can select sprite editor. In this top tab, I will select skinning editor. This is where we can add some bones and joints. I select create bone over here and then double click on my sprite. This is a very simple design, but the general goal is to build out a puppet-like structure. I'll start with the base by clicking and dragging. A right click exits from the bone segment, and I can connect the other elements. We have to connect the head with some joints of the antenna, and we have to connect the mouth and the eyes. It seems a bit strange at times, but just think how things might connect. Next, I'm going to select auto geometry, which creates the sprite borders and weights. Weights can be thought of as how anchored the specific segment is. A heavier segment is less pliable and will be more likely to hold its shape while manipulating other segments. Increasing the sliders creates a more complex but more resource-intensive rig. Usually the auto settings are pretty good if you're doing something simple. The lines are the added geometry, while the gradient shows the weight, and this could be adjusted if you want. I'm mostly going to leave this alone. You can start moving things around to see how it behaves, and you can reset everything up there with the reset button. We can also edit the geometry if we want to get a little closer outline. I think this looks all right. We need to next adjust the depth of the sprite elements so things are layered correctly, with the paddle in the back, then head, then eyes and mouth. I also want to rename these elements so I know what each is. Then we can apply this, then head back to the scene to assemble our panel bot. I will add a new component, a sprite skin, and set it to create bones. Now it's time to build the bot by moving each piece back into place. And now that the panel is reassembled, we need to fix that collider. I'm just going to make some size and placement adjustments. I actually only want the collider around the panel base because the head is more just decoration. I don't want the head to affect the ball during gameplay. Now we add another component, IK Manager 2D. This component allows us to make this rig function. I'll add a new limb to this list, and we can see it up here. I'll rename this so it's a little clearer for me. I'll drag my antenna here into the effector. After selecting the move tool, I can drag this selector to where I want the limb and hit create target. Now, if you see, I can actually move this element. This is a simple animation, so we can go from here. If you were doing a walking animation or action with arms and legs, then you'd want to do this for each movable section or limb. I'll open the animation and animator windows now to get started on the animations. We select the paddle and create a new animation asset. We'll put it in a animation folder first, and we'll make a paddle folder. Name this file paddle.idle for the idle animation. We'll save this and then start animating in the animator window. You can get pretty detailed with these options, but I'm going to keep it simple by just recording here and then selecting a specific frame count, and I can adjust the sprite to create keyframes. You can get finicky here if you want. I'm just going to make some quick adjustments, and this is okay for now. Next, I'm going to add a new clip. This one will be for when the paddle moves. I just want an easy change here for the moving animation, so we'll make some quick changes. This is just a very light tutorial, so this will work all right for what we need. Now we have an idle animation and a moving animation. Next, in the animator, we can see our idle and move animation states. Usually, you want the idle animation to be the default state, as we have it set here. We need animation transitions, so we need to transition from idle to move and also from move back to idle. To determine what will trigger each animation, I'll create a isMoving boolean, and that's going to link the paddle movement to the animation. In these other settings, I want to make sure the hasExitTime is deselected, fixedDuration is deselected, and transitionDuration is set to 0. This will create instant transitions between animations. And we have to set our condition within here using the isMoving boolean we created. And now we go back into our paddle script to pull it all together. First, I need to add the animator component. So we add this here at the top of the code and then add our component into the start method. Within the update method, I will add our parameter boolean of is moving to check if the paddle is receiving directional input. Now when our user is pressing a directional button, in this case A, D, left arrow, or right arrow, then the movement animation is played. Otherwise, the idle animation is played. The one issue is that our paddle and animation is built to move in the right direction, so even when it moves left, it will be posed to move right. We need to flip the sprite for left movement. I will create a boolean value called facing right and set it to true. Then I will create a method that flips the sprite if moving to the left. This flip method checks whether the facing right boolean is true and then flips the sprite when necessary, based on the direction of the movement. We'll add a conditional statement in our update method to check and call the flip method when needed. And here's how it looks in action. Notice how the default state is the idle animation. Whenever the player moves the paddle, the movement animation plays, and the sprite flips depending on whether the movement is left or right. There's a lot more that can be done or cleaned up. I'd like to add a separate animation for when the ball hits the paddle and also one when a life is lost, but that will be for another time. Next is the enemy sprite. If you remember from the concept art, this is a lanternfish. This was also drawn in Procreate, but I did this one differently. I created individual frames to create a swimming animation rather than separate elements that we'd rig with bones. This is just a rough animation of only 6 frames. I'm certainly not a professional animator, but there's a lot of animation tricks you can learn if you really are interested in that sort of a thing. For the sake of time and to avoid redundancy, I'm going to go through this more quickly. I'll stop to mention anything that is greatly different from the previous animation. One difference is how the file is treated within Photoshop. Each frame is layered on top of each other. This would be a good point for a palette swap or other cosmetic changes if you wanted. Otherwise, we save this as a PSB file rather than a PNG, and we head back into Unity. Now I've imported this into Unity, and it's recognized as a PSV file. Most of these settings are correct, but we do have to uncheck character rig because we won't be creating a rig for this animation. Applying this change, Unity automatically creates a sort of sprite sheet, as seen in the bottom right. I can access the group of frames by changing to a single column view and selecting the six frames. I then drag them into the hierarchy to add them to the scene. Unity recognizes this as an animation, so I name the animation file and save it into my animations folder. We can test the animation in the timeline or by playing the game. Now, I'm not adding any collision properties or any other interactive programming to the fish right now. I just want to create a quick script to get it to move across the screen. And there it is. We've got a fish sprite animation and a robot paddle animation. There's obviously much more that can be done. The fish isn't much of a hazard at the moment, but hopefully everyone got an idea about how this all works. Thank you.
Derek, this was awesome. Oh my god. I love when you guys come up with this stuff. I'm telling you, I love masterclass.
That'd be nice if the fish could eat the ball.
I know. Seriously, there's so much you could do with that.
My plan right now is the little lantern on the fish. If the player's able to hit it, they're going to get like a huge bonus.
Oh my gosh.
And then I'm going to have unbreakable bricks where the only way to actually get past them is to wait for the fish to come actually like chomp through them. So that's kind of my plan at the moment. If I can pull
Easter
it off.
Easter egg. Yeah. Easter egg. That's awesome. Okay. That's perfect. That's great. Are you going to make the paddle smaller as they go up levels too?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. I was thinking of a different, I'll have to ask my daughter. I don't know. She's the one telling me ideas.
Yeah. That is so cool. That's really nice. I love it.
Thanks.
Love it too.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Derek, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
We take it away.
Oh, let's go. Okay, can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. So I will start with a plain presentation, and after that, we will come into the practice mode. So I'm going to present today the Sift workstation. We do a lot of work in cybersecurity with that. It's a tool that is used mostly in DIFR, digital forensic and incident response. So what are we going to talk today? We are going to see together what the Sift workstation is, why I use it, what various tools are included and utility are included. And we will do a quick practice of the installation and the disk analysis with the Sift workstation. And after that, we will talk about the questions. So what's the Sift workstation? It's a collection of free and open source incident response and forensic tool design to perform detailed digital forensic examination in a variety of settings. It was created by Rob Lee, one of the Science Institute teachers, for his classes, but over the year, he and a small team have continually updated the Sift workstation for the community and for the public resource. That Sift workstation have today over 125,000 downloads, and it's they continuously added new tools. Oops, I'm going too fast. So why the Sift workstation? Generally, we all know about Kali Linux, And Kali Linux is a great tool because it's a distribution where you have included all the tools you need to do the job. So there was not really anything like that for the differ for digital forensic. The digital forensic tool right now is able to match any of the proprietary and commercial software that are available on the market. Generally, what we have on the market, it's the most of us are really hard to get. By example, coffee, which was made available to the public a few years ago, but was there since a long time, but only accessible to the law enforcement organization and others. NCASE, by example, is really expensive for everybody that work on the digital forensic side, and it's really hard for a new student like us to get access to those tools because of the cost. There are a few that are free, but they don't do all the job. They do just a part of the job. By example, you have Volatility, which is used only for memory analysis. We have HXV, which is used for imaging and all that. So what do you have included in the SIFT workstation? First of all, the SIFT workstation is a complete distribution. So it's based on the Ubuntu 20.04 base, the long-term service model, and it's completely included into the Ubuntu 20.04. You can either get it as a VM appliance, or you can install it or upgrade it easily from any Ubuntu-based system. You can install your Ubuntu and after that, just do an upgrade and install or upgrade, and you get what you need. It have a really extended file system support. You can read almost everything. So you can read NCFS file. You can access raw data. You can read HSF files. You can read swipe memory. You can read memory data, RAM data. You can read all of the FATs, all of the EXT. So you can do forensic for any kind of system. It also have a huge evidence image support in the field. Various tools have various formats for creating their image. You can work on raw images. You can work on images coming from FTK Imager. You can work with images coming from NCASE. You have the whole choice to do what you need to do. It also includes a lot of evidence response support tools like F-Response, Rapid Sprint. You can add on threat intelligence and indicator of compromise. You can add threat hunting and malware analysis capability to the tool. Some of the software included are Log2Timeline, which is used to create timeline generation when we are doing forensic, by example, to know exactly when the things happen, not just what happened. We have Volatility included. We have Block Extractor. We have Claim AV. We have Image Mounter, QME, Slutkit. All those are really interesting tools used by any forensic analyst. We also have a compatibility with Remnux. Remnux is a Linux toolkit that is hugely used today for reverse engineering. So it's used mostly to analyze malware and know exactly what the malware is intending to do. So it's possible to include Remnux into your installation of the SIFT workstation so you can do all that together. So let's do a little practice. So we have three ways to install the SQL station. The easiest one is to get a VM. I can show you where to get it. You just go to the Sense website and you look for a SIFT workstation. They will require you to create an account to have a Sense account, a Sense Institute account. As soon as it's completely free, so anybody can have access. As soon as you have the account, you can download the SIFT workstation, the VM appliance, and it's just a file. And you can, from there, I think that the only format they give is the VM box image. Yeah. Oh, it's an OVA, so you can import it into any of your tools. So you can import it into Hyper-V or VMware if you prefer to work with VMware. So that's the first way to install the SIFT workstation. The second way is also simple, is install a native Ubuntu system. So you run your installer of the Ubuntu 20.04, finish the install, update it, and just with one command, the sudo SIFT install, you have your SIFT. Your SIFT workstation, the Ubuntu system will download everything that you need to have a completely working SIFT workstation. The third option for the people who really love Windows, right now Windows have offered the Windows subsystem for Linux, so you can install the WSL. And when you are installing the WSL, you can just choose Ubuntu during your installation. And at the end of the installation, you have your Ubuntu subsystem. You can launch Ubuntu bash, and with the command SIFT install mode --- mode equals server, you will have the installation of SIFT into your Windows system. So you can enjoy your Windows system with everything that you need to do your forensic job. So that was easy. I installed the VM, but when I installed it, I have a few issues. First of all, the system didn't want to wake up, so I have to do a few tweaks. I'm going to show you what I did. First of all, when you import the VM, it's not coming as Ubuntu system. So I have to change the type to Linux and to change the version to Ubuntu 64 bits. That was the first tweak. After that, my VM was able to start, but I was not able to get any display. So I have to go into the display and play with the display. I have to put some memory for the video memory and change the graphic controller from, I think by default it was VBox VGA, but that was not working. I chose the VM SVGA, and that's the one that works for me. So maybe you can have a few issues, but tweaking it is really the way to go. There was one more thing. When I installed it by default, the processor was really high. They chose to use a 4 CPU. My computer was not so big, so I have to reduce it to just one CPU. So it was a little slow, but I can work with that. So let's start my VM. So it comes with a default username and password. The default username is Sense Forensic, and the default password is Forensics. So you can change the password if you want. The best way, according to the creator of the SIFT workstation, Rob Lee, is really to use it as a VM, because the big advantage you have using it as a VM is you have the VM, you have a case to work on, you work on your case, and every system and every software you are using is going to receive an update or be changed in a few days, in a few months, in a few years, in a few years. So he recommends to really use the VM, do your case and froze your VM at that moment, or just shut it down. So every time, if in the future, because in forensic, people can find out that, or can want to question the way you made your discoveries. So when you froze your VM and you keep your VM with the evidence inside it, you can just come back there having the same tools and be able to reproduce exactly the way you were able to get to gather the information you gathered and represent it to them in a safe way. So as soon as you are logged in, what I did is I actually used WinSCP to copy the files. I downloaded, you can also do that. There's a way to download website that gave the ability to download raw hard drive or hard drive images. I downloaded these two images from a website that offer hard drive images to train. So I downloaded them and I used WinXCP to be able to send my images into my VM. So you have to check the IP address of your box. You command IPA to get the IP address, and my IP address is right here. So I use that IP address and to log in into my VM with my username SenseForensics and my password Forensics. And boom, I'm inside my VM. I can send all the files I want right here. So I just imported my files over here into my cases file. The SIFT workstation come created with a cases folder where you can import your cases file. So I just sent my cases files over there. As soon as I get there, it's recommended for walking into the SIFT workstation to use the root account. So I'm going to do a sudo su to get as root, so I have access to all the tools and everything I need to do. So if I go into my cases files, I will see my... I can see my files there. And I use the command mount. I use the command EWF mount to be able to mount my file into the system. So I choose NPS, the one I want, the first one. And I want to mount it into MMT EWF. As soon as I hit star, I already have mounted the file, so I'm not going to do it again. As soon as I hit enter, my file will be mounted automatically into that folder. And as my file are there, I can go back there now into that folder. I can change directly to MMT mount. Mount EWF, and I can did I remove that? Oh, I think that I will have to mount it then. Okay, let me go there and do that. Okay. So my file is mounted there. I can go there and see my file. And I see my file EWF1 there. I can check the information about my file. Oh, no. I made a mistake. It's EWF1. So it's showing me that my file is a DOS file. It has a DOS or MBR boot sector, or MBR boot sector, supposed to be XP, but at that moment, he don't have a lot of information to give me. So I'm going to move ahead and mount that file with the command mount minus O. Offset. My file, I want to mount it into the folder window. Boom, my file is mounted, so I can go into my folder and mount, Windows mount, to see what I got there. And we can see that I have my folder, my Windows folder open there. And from there, I can do everything I need to do. I can check the bootini file. I can go into the various folder on that computer, and I can do all the analysis I need to do. So that was the conclusion of my presentation. And I was going to show you that tool, and I hope that all of you would be able to use it in the future. Thank you.
Wow, Derek, that was awesome. Woo, learned a lot. Does anybody have questions for our presenters? Casey, Derek, or Derek? Yeah, I agree, Derek Lewis. That is some real smart person stuff. Yep. All right. So if there aren't any questions, I'll let you go. I'll close out the meeting. Let's see. Who do we have next week? Next week, I know that we are full. We have a lot of people. Michael Lanfranchi, David Haslam, Von Eric Young, and Evan Dix are next week. I don't know what they're going to be presenting, but I'm sure it's going to be awesome. So thank you to our presenters tonight. I learned a lot. My brain hurts now after Derek's. That was awesome. Yeah, I'm going to have to rewatch that so I can get it down. And thanks for everybody who joined and interacted. That was great. Everybody have a good night.
Thank you, Angela. Bye.
Night, all.